If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Let's BOGO. The Hoppin' Good Sale at Designer Shoe Warehouse is on. Buy any pair of shoes in-store or online. Get a second qualifying pair 50% off. Yep, must-have sandals, sneakers, and more from brands you love are buy one, get one 50% off at DSW. But only for a limited time, so hop to it. Fill your basket and score BOGO 50% off at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 929 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep it dialed into the station, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. Stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is, of course, the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you.
My company as he is every Tuesday and Friday. You can hear him on VSiN's College Basketball, College Football Betting Podcast. You can also hear him on the Betting Tailgate shows for VSiN Weekends, 9 a.m. Central Time, VSiN Prime Time. Download the VSiN Watch app on Twitter, on X, at 1TimMurray. Tim, good day, sir.
What is up, my friend? What is up? I got a text from a buddy of mine, said, what do we do now? Well, got the draft, got the NBA playoffs coming up. We'll be all right. We'll survive, us college sports fans, and We'll make our way through it.
Us Southern college sports fans, a lot of us will turn our attention to the Masters, so we're going to have Wes Reynolds on. He, of course, golf expert for VSiN. He's going to join us during hour number two. We'll get you ready for the Masters. But we'll obviously start with last night, with the tournament in general. We'll hand out some awards during the next segment. We'll get into the list. That's when we will discuss whether or not Zach Kleiman's a trailblazer in the NBA. You know, they say it's a copycat league, Tim, and the Denver Nuggets. I mean, it is striking. Matt Moore's over on Twitter right now. When you read the justification and the logic, it's like if you just replace Nuggets with the Grizzlies, it was like it fit the same narrative. And so we'll discuss that during hour number two, as well as get into some Masters talk. But I think let's start with last night. And you and I were texting beforehand because maybe this is experience. Maybe 25-year-old me would have said, you know what, those fine kids from Houston, they're the team of destiny, and nothing's going to stop them. I'm going to go all in on Houston. 36-year-old me also woke up with a crick in his neck. Another nice, nothing like getting injured sleeping. That's a nice reminder of how washed up you are as an individual.
Are you a Major League Baseball player?
I always love the, we should do that during the summer. Baseball injuries, do we believe it?
Who was it, Marty Cordova, who fell asleep in a tanning bed?
Well, we had one, was it Bartolo? Somebody got hurt sneezing.
Yep. Which I can get.
Honestly, is one I have less of a time. I'll just be honest, Freddie Freeman, when you get hurt in the shower, I'm just, my mind goes to you were doing something naughty in the shower. Like, I don't know if your wife was in there or not, but like, I assume something was going on. We should do that game, whether or not we believe that. But no, I'm just a washed up, skinny fat radio guy. But at 36, I had the knowledge and the experience to know I had Houston money line Saturday night. And when you get that kind of win, which, let's be clear, a win you do not deserve. And it wasn't like, oh, I had plus 5.5 and, you know, maybe we could have seen the free throws play out a particular way. But when you have a money line bet and, I don't know, what, 37 minutes it wasn't going to cash, 38 minutes, 39 minutes it wasn't even going to cash, and then you win, I knew immediately Saturday night was the end of my college basketball betting. Because if you turn around and you bet on Monday, you are going to go cold for at least a month. And now I'm going to be in this game with God of, God owes me like gambling slap bets, but I don't know when they're coming. And so now I'm just hoping that I can maybe not bet for, I don't know, good solid month, maybe work on the relationships with my family, see people that matter in your life, and just not bet for a month and hope he forgets. But I did at least know not to bet last night, and I kept thinking the whole time, even as Houston was up, man, there's just something about it. I felt like Houston was less of a sure thing last night than I did Duke, and Duke found a way to lose, and Houston, I don't even know if necessarily I'd say found a way to lose, but the entire time I was just thinking, man, I don't trust that Houston's locked this up, and I don't know how you felt about it, but that was kind of, as I was going through the game, we get through more specifics, I think what stood out to me was the entire second half, I was just thinking, I don't think this is over, man.
Yeah, it's funny because I was in on Houston. I had them plus the points on Saturday. I think you could, you know, flip it on its head and say that, you know, Florida had no business beating Texas Tech in the Elite Eight. This is a team that's kind of flirted with disaster a bunch of times in this tournament, and give them credit. They showed to be a quite resilient bunch and ultimately getting this championship. There was a moment, I don't know if it was around the 10-minute mark, when I kind of looked up at the score and I said, man, they had a chance to put them away and they didn't do it. And now this is going to be a grind because, you know, Florida, as we saw, and we talked about this, or I talked about this the other day, which was like, you know, if Duke plays Houston in a 7-game NBA series, Duke wins the series, maybe in 6. Maybe
I feel pretty confident. I mean,
maybe in 5.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, like you said, I don't know who ends up getting home court. But yes, I will say this. We would get a 7-game series. I feel confident saying Duke would win, and you would feel like Duke was the better team.
And that's the beauty of this tournament, right? It's a one and done, and you could get days like Walter Clayton not being on. But I think, to me, when I look back and I do an autopsy on this game and how Florida ultimately won, number one, they deserve a ton of credit for how they just locked up defensively. And you know, same can be said about Duke in the final 10.5 minutes, can be said about Houston in the final, you know, 4 minutes. I mean, they
certainly the last 4 possessions
crapped down their leg, you know. But I thought Florida really kind of picked it up defensively and locked them down. You know, I thought Juwan Roberts, for as you know, he hits the clutch free throws against Duke. You know, I was with a group of people last night at a sports book, and we're just like, is he ever in control of his shot? He like takes these crab dribbles and then just kind of turns and fires. Like, shoulders aren't square ever. He just kind of just launches it at the board.
Never has the seams. Like, no, you know, it's like, yeah. It's ball's like, never right, spinning like
one,
it should.
One, two, gotta go up now. Yep. And it's like, he had one where he banked it off the backboard. I think he probably got fouled. They didn't call it. And I was like, how did that go in? But, you know, he was a bit off. But, you know, the thing about Florida, the fact that they were down 3 at halftime, kind of like, I mean, it's funny how there are two sets of games that I find very fascinating in this regard. Texas Tech coming back to beat Arkansas in the fashion that they did in the Sweet 16, and then essentially doing the same thing except on the opposite side against Florida. It's kind of what happened with Houston, right? Where like Houston at halftime against Duke, I'm like, man, they're only down 6. Wow, they have to be feeling pretty good. They're only down 6.
No, you texted me. You texted me. You go, Because we were the whole first half, we were just miserable. We're like, this is we're losers.
Couldn't make
like
anything.
We were just like, this was so dumb. Like we were just kicking ourselves. We both said Duke was really good, and you did go, we're only down 6? Question mark. And I was like, I mean, yeah, but then that was the other thing is they went down 6, and then you and I felt better about the way they played in the second half, and we look up and they're like down 12.
Right, and same thing about last night. Florida's only down 3 at half. I'm like, how the hell are they only down 3 at halftime? Like, that half was dominated by Houston. And then Houston comes out, and they go on an 11-2 run to start the second half. And I'm starting to feel a little bit better. But you always had that feeling. And I know it never really came. I know he hit the one big 3. But you were like, Clayton's going to get his. Now, he made a couple really good passes. He had a couple of and ones. He hit that big 3. But it was... it was kind of pieced together. And look, at the end of the day, Florida won on the glass 40-39. They held, you know, in check. I think Houston had like 5 offensive rebounds in the first 2 minutes and then like just 10 the rest of the game, which is saying something about Houston. So I don't know. I know everyone wants to know whether it was a collapse by Houston or a win by Florida, same about Saturday night. I do think the staggering number that has been pointed out by many, and you hit at it as well, which is I believe they had 5 turnovers the first 38 minutes of the game and had 4 turnovers in our last 4 possessions.
Yeah, I do think the one difference I felt like between Saturday night and last night, I think there's something to be said for turning it over in the half court versus not even getting the ball in bounds. Like, to me,
sure.
When you like, we can parse the, I think we can all agree if you're sharp, you got to at least get the ball up. Like, you've got it. You've got to fire. Even if it gets blocked, who cares? Like, you had to fire. We can all acknowledge that. We can also sit there and go, Walter Clayton Jr. made an unbelievable play defensively. I mean, he closed and collapsed so hard because you could tell, all right, the initial play is designed to get LJ a look. Everybody goes with him. He comes off that back screen. He thinks he's going to catch, turn, and fire. He catches, turns, ready to fire, and Clayton is just in his grill. I do give Florida credit. They locked down defensively.
No doubt.
And honestly, the play that I thought was worse, like, you're always going to remember, because it's just an unsatisfying end to not even see a shot get up, because you sit there and go, that's a hell of a way to lose. I don't know. What was Sharp doing on the possession before when he just dribbled into a triple team?
Yeah, and then gets it dribbled and dribbles right off his leg.
Yeah, that was the one where I was like, okay, what was the thought process there?
I mean, is Sharp, I mean, yeah, you're right. I'm rewatching it right now. Because he shoots out like a missile.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they had like a staggered screen, and somehow Sharp just sprints out there and gets in his way. And it's so easy for us to say, you got to shoot it anyways. Like, you know, it's a millisecond thought. To me, the issue I had about the final play, well, the execution was terrible, but you have that final timeout, and I would have advanced the ball past half court, called timeout, set up it in the half court. It was weird to me that Sampson called the timeout right away after the free throw, when you can advance, obviously in the college basketball, you can't advance the ball like the NBA.
But you could go to the hash mark, call timeout. We see everybody do that.
But you have plenty of time. You have 18 seconds. This wasn't like 4 seconds to go, right? So I would have dribbled it in the half court and then called timeout and let everyone, you know, kind of chill out a little bit there. So also what was kind of bizarre, and people noted this, and maybe this is nitpicking, there was 12:06 to go, and Kelvin Sampson used his second to last timeout when you were 6 seconds away from the media timeout. Seemed a little odd timing there.
The only thing I could think of was, didn't somebody hobble off the floor? And I was thinking, he's thinking, all right, I'll take the timeout here, because I think when you call it at 12:06, doesn't that roll into a media now? He's thinking, I'll take that. I'll get 5 minutes, and instead of having to wait on the next whistle, I'll just take it now, and hopefully we can get right back in there. I want to go back to the last play, because at first I figured what would happen is what you were talking about.
God, that is a deep three, man.
Oh, yeah. No, it was...
I mean, he's a good 6 feet off the arc.
Yeah.
And that's the play that they had drawn up. He's about to pull with four. I mean, and here's the thing, too, once again. Whether you credit Florida or, you know, criticize Houston, that's the shot you're settling for when you had 13 seconds to try to figure it out. And you're not going to have really time because there's 4 seconds to go. You're not really going to have time to get an offensive rebound there. It's just, it's pretty wild to see that's the play. And it's not, and once again, if that's the play you get when you had no timeouts, I can kind of understand it. But you drew something up, and clearly it just fell apart.
Couple of things. So the, because I, like you, kind of thought, all right, they're going to go and they'll get right in front of the coach's box, call timeout, and they'll draw something up from there. The only thing, and I did not watch any post game, so I did not hear if they got asked about this, and I know there's a lot of media, so this was just my interpretation of it. I wondered if he thought, hey, if I get it on the side and Florida only has to defend, you know, this smaller area, we don't have a timeout, what if we don't get it in? I think he felt pretty confident Florida wasn't going to press. And so he at least thought, all right, worst case scenario, we're going to get the ball past half court, and then we're at least going to get into our set. That was the only thing that I could think of, because I was like you just normally see everybody go get right in front of the hash mark, call timeout, and you run your play from there. I don't know if that's a decent explanation. That was the only thing that I could think of.
Yeah.
But then, so then the other thing, though, that I was also thinking about, you know, when we talk about those last few possessions, maybe this is Florida's story, because you kept hearing Golden throughout the tournament say, you know, when they fell behind and they had their chances to run. And you could tell part of the story was, we think we can wear them down. I just wondered at the end, man, Houston looked out of gas to me. And I think the reason they tried to draw up a three was, I think they just wanted no part of overtime. Let's have a shot. Let's try to end it.
I mean, they clearly were shooting, going for a three, right? They were not trying to get downhill. They really had no inside, you know, penetration most of the game from their guards. You know, and the length of Florida, you know, was pretty imposing. You saw LJ Cryer kind of get in there a couple times and either try a floater or kind of pull it back out, some baseline jumpers. But they clearly were trying to go for the jugular there on that final possession, right? There were a couple of dribble handoffs. They were looking to try to get someone for an open look. And, you know, at the end of the day, they shot poorly from three, but, you know, for a team in Houston that is one of the better three-point shooting teams in the country, they stunk from inside the arc all year long, and that showed. I mean, they were 18 of 44 from inside the arc yesterday.
This was the other question that I kind of had in my head. And, you know, I am sympathetic when fan bases, they win, and you feel like all the conversation is about the team that lost. And,
sure,
you know, oh, you're not giving us credit. It's like, I want to be very clear. Like, I was nothing but impressed with Florida. How many times they got behind, how many situations it looked like were dire and they just worked their way out of. And then honestly, I think what was really impressive about last night, they proved they can win just about any type of game. Like, they got into Houston's game, and yeah, it didn't look great. But in the end, I felt left leaving. I was like, I kind of think the better team won. And, you know, if you want to use your seven-game series,
I think Florida wins the seven.
I do too. And it's one of those situations where the ending was a little unsatisfying. Was that an all-time classic? No, but you know what really it spoke to me? It's like, sometimes the theater and the stage is what matters. And like, when you had the first two coaches' sideline interviews, and you know they can't hear each other, but Kelvin was talking about nerves. He's like, you know, guy, like, it's obvious. We didn't look like this the other night. We have nerves right now. Golden, same thing. He's like, we're sped up. Our nerves are showing. We're making uncharacteristic mistakes. I think that adds to the context of it. And like, I can understand for Gators fans out there being like, talk about us more. It's like, okay, I fully acknowledge that. But it's not like you and I sat down and were like, okay, we've got to talk about Houston for 45 minutes. What is it about us as sports fans, though, that we're more, it's not even drawn to the loser in a negative. Like, I don't want to bury Houston. Yeah. But the same thing, there's something more interesting about Houston right now than there is Florida.
Because you see this big lead evaporate. And to be honest, it wasn't a situation where you saw Walter Clayton go nuclear.
Right.
And the Texas Tech game, lesser stage, obviously, Elite Eight, you hit bang, 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 3-3-3, and it's like, whoa, where'd the lead go? It was like a slow, methodical kind of grabbing your foot. And
the bleed. It was the bleed out.
Yeah, it wasn't anything. And once again, to your point, I think Florida over time is going to get a ton of rightful due because they ran their way through the best conference in the country. Yes, it was the best conference in the country. I think we can safely say that. Won their conference tournament, dominant fashion, and this is just kind of who they were. You know, we're coming off of 2 years of a team in UConn that just ran through the NCAA tournament like it was no problem, and that wasn't the case for Florida, right? They needed to come back to beat UConn. They pretty much handled their business against Maryland, but they were only up 2 at halftime against Maryland. Magical comeback against Texas Tech. Down 9 in the second half against Auburn. Down 12 against Houston. Like, this proved out to be who they were. And I think time is going to really reflect positively on Florida. But I think for Houston, and maybe more so Duke, because Duke had Cooper Flagg, and he's the number one player in the world, and they had a 14-point lead with 8 minutes to go. And you're like, how did that happen? And you saw the collapse there. Once again, there were some big plays. The sharp three was clutch, but it was more of the self-inflicted mistakes. And that's kind of what Houston did as well. So, yeah, Florida deserves all the credit in the world for this run to a national championship. And to be honest, right, when they won the SEC, it was immediately thought like, not everywhere, but so many people were like, Florida's going to win the title.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, let's pump the brakes a little bit. And I was almost right about 4 times, but I wasn't, because they figured out ways. And I, you know, that gives them credit, because I think, to your point, which is really impressive about Florida, is twofold. Number one was, this was a Houston game. If you went to Kelvin Sampson and you said, 65-63 is the final score of the national championship, he's like, all right, great. We've got a chance to win this bad boy.
I think if you just showed him Florida's box score,
Him Walter Clayton had no points in the first half and would make 1 3-pointer, he'd be like, yeah.
You're going to hold them to 65. You're not giving him any of the differences and whatnot, but you're going to hold Clayton to 11. You're going to hold Clayton and Martin to what, 16 combined?
18, yeah.
18 combined.
2 threes combined.
Yeah. I think he would have felt pretty good.
Yeah. And I think that's probably why Houston fans, no doubt, have to be kicking themselves right now, because this was a game that they dictated. Obviously had the big lead, but the player that had essentially been unstoppable and had joined a fraternity of just he and Larry Bird scoring 30-plus points in the Elite Eight and the Final Four, and then you held him to no points in the first half and 1 3-pointer, and you still lose the game, that's where it has to come away really frustrating. But, you know, that's the nature of this beast, man. That's the nature of this tournament and this one-and-done nature. I mean, statistically speaking, you look at it, they had 16 more shot attempts than Florida yesterday and did not win the game.
Well, the other thing, though, that I was thinking about with Clayton, and, you know, there's something to be said also for his night was hell. I mean, they were They were guarding him unbelievably. Nothing was easy.
There was no help off of him. He was face guarded pretty much the whole night.
But he never ducked his head once. And like that's the other thing. He can go 0 for 6. But man, when he let that 1-3 rip, I was like, that's in. And there is something to be said to me. It's like the difference between guys that put up numbers, but like guy that's having a miserable night, the type of night that it's easy just to drag your head and just think, not my night. What are you going to do? But not only to hit the three, but then also to have the closeout play that defensively ends it. It's like, I don't know, man. I tip my cap to that because it's kind of what, you know, if you're coaching, but like what you want to see out of your team, it's like there are other ways to impact the game, and he still figured it out.
Had 7 assists, had a couple big and ones. And like you said, I mean, the closeout shooting out like a missile to, I mean, he affected the shot, right? He didn't want to put the shot up because of him coming out. And, you know, I saw this stat, which is pretty wild. Houston had just 5 assists in the game. The last time they had less than 6 assists in a game was November of 2020. I mean,
yeah,
Florida,
I mean,
Florida's not getting enough credit
I think
for
to
how
your,
well they defended in this game.
I think to your point, I want to see the stat broadcast to you. So they had 9 offensive rebounds in the second half. I felt like the other story of the second half was, man, didn't it just feel like Houston was one and done every possession?
Yeah. I forget who it was. I was listening to the Field of 68 guys, and they had one of the assistants from Florida jump on.
The one that did or didn't get the tech.
How about that too?
I mean, that's another underrated moment.
Technicals.
Yes.
2 technicals in the game and they won. Like, we were sitting there.
If I were Golden, I would have lost my mind on that assistant.
I totally missed it.
Because when they blew the whistle, I assumed, the tech was on Golden. And then, like, you know, because it took the broadcast a little bit to figure out, like, no, it was on the bench. And I'm sitting there going, like, guys, we're down double digits and we're getting technical. Like, what are we doing?
I mean, even the second technical was idiotic.
And the
bounce. Look, and the rules state, and they said it right away, if you slam the ball down, you got to catch it. But once you let it go, and it's like, I'm a big proponent of, like, I think.
God gave us judgment, use a little bit of it.
Yeah, it's like half the time these technicals, you know, by refs are like, come on, dude. Like, what are we doing here? I was like, you have to call that tech.
It's
like,
the worst. It's the worst kind.
He screams at the ref.
You make him have to make the call.
And it's like, dude, you, like, I am a big believer of, like, let him play. And, like, I don't know about you. The first half, I thought, I mean, there was a ton of missed shots. But I thought the reps were really good in the first half because they were consistent and just, like, let them play. And then, both teams were in the bonus by, like, 5 minutes into the second half. I know that's a little hyperbolic.
No, I mean, I swear it felt like Houston got into the bonus before the first media timeout.
And there was a tweet out there at one point from the technical on Florida, the fouls were 11-1 against Houston.
So,
not saying it's the reason.
No. Here was my there was the other Houston, the goaltend that wasn't called.
Oh, that was terrible. And of course, what happens right away? Yeah. 3-pointer on the other side.
This was because Giannotto and I were texting about this. I felt like what happened, and I'm not justifying it, but I think Florida at the half, their adjustment was, guys, we got to be more physical. I don't care if we get some fouls, but we got to get more physical. And so what I think happened is, I don't feel like any of those first 5 fouls that Florida had were soft calls. Like, I felt like those were fouls, but I think it's human nature to look up and you're the official and you look up and you see it's 5-0 and you know immediately, oh my God, everyone's going to talk about the ratio. And then I felt like it was like the classic, all right, we got to even it up here. And then it completely changed how the game was being officiated.
Yeah, I thought...
Because the bigger problem that I had with it, it was less about first half to second half. It was really, if you go back to Saturday, I felt like in the first game, Auburn and Florida, they let them play, and they definitely let them play in the second game. and then you let them play in the first half, I think everybody's just thinking, all right, this is how the game's going to be officiated, and then all of a sudden it flips. That's kind of where I had a little bit of the issue, but I'm still, as someone who was like rooting for Kelvin Sampson, rooting for Houston to win that, man, I did not feel like they got screwed by the whistle.
No, I don't. I don't want to sit here and say that they're.
But it was. I will say this: it was noticeable between half number one and half number two. I'm with you entirely.
And I'm telling you, man, that dude Francis from Houston, if he does like him getting in foul trouble, he was just on one, man. Well, he had a stretch, didn't he? He had two fouls in like 6 seconds or something.
I felt like it was on the same possession. And then Tugler got in foul trouble.
Yep.
And I do also think, though, that also, it, to me, is another Florida stat. I think where Florida got him is Florida's depth, which has been a large portion of the story for them this year. It showed yet again. Florida had more dudes.
Tyler Coleman just tweeted both of us and showed the breakdown of the fouls in the second half. Houston, 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 Florida. Houston, 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 Florida. Then that was the Tech. Then two more on Houston.
They were in the bonus with 12 of 6.
Yeah. And Florida doesn't really miss free throws. Like, everyone on their team is a pretty darn good free throw shooter. And, like, you know, once again, Walter Clayton goes to the free throw line. He's having a terrible night. Calmly steps up, buries the two free throws to get his first points of the game. Like, that's a under talked about aspect of that Florida team is that their guards, it just felt like, didn't miss free throws.
No, and that was the other thing. When you knew Houston was going to have to start fouling.
Yeah, I know Aberdeen missed that free throw to keep it a 2-point game. But yeah, I mean, Clayton, Martin, and Richard were not going to miss free throws. They're 88, 76, and 84% from the line. And well, Hauk is 80% too.
I think the other aspect of it is Houston only gets to the line 14 times.
How is that possible? And I'm not saying, once again, I'm not, like, was Houston?
I think they were scared to go inside,
they
man.
They were. I mean, outside of Juwan Roberts, they really didn't go inside all that much.
And a lot of the fouls were just kind of on the perimeter. Or honestly, it felt like a lot of the fouls were like on loose ball situations. I'll be honest, I did not know. I thought when you go up and down with the basketball, I thought that was an automatic travel. I didn't know you could just let the ball go. You can't touch it, but I did not realize that.
Yeah.
That was I just thought that was an automatic travel. Remember back in the day before we just always started calling that traveling, it was up and down, up and down.
Up and
I thought that was like, I thought that was a travel, man.
Should he have just grabbed it?
I mean, the argument for grabbing it was, at least if you grab it, there still would have been, what, 4 or 5 seconds maybe?
Yeah. And then you foul and or you hope for a steal or something. I
mean, I honestly don't. I think considering the state of panic that he was in, I actually didn't think he did a bad thing because he did box out his defender because I give him credit. He knew the rule.
Oh, yeah.
Like he let it go and you could tell he was trying to move the defender out. But the problem was, I think it was.
Was it Roberts there? I forget who it was.
The problem was that guy was like getting wrung around the neck, and he couldn't get on. Like he couldn't get free to get the ball. Like, but they did at least. Like I give them credit. They at least recognized the situation. But like, yeah, the gift of hindsight. He was probably better off. He was probably better off trying to touch it, stop the clock, get the foul, and see if he could have had it again. But I mean, let's be real. If you're going to shot fake it, you have to shot fake it immediately. And you could tell he was thinking, as soon as I touch it, I'm getting rid of it. And Clayton was there.
Man, I'm watching the play again. I mean, it actually wasn't a bad play.
See, this because George and I were talking about this. We got a little annoyed at the Kelvin couldn't draw up a play. I actually thought that was a pretty good play. Because option one is clearly what option one should be, which is get the ball in Cryer's hands. If he can get a look, let it go. And then
I'll tell you what, as I'm watching it right now, it looks like is it Francis? It's supposed to be a doubled staggered screen, and Francis the big. So it's a bunch of screens on the perimeter, right?
Yes.
So Cryer brings it up, and Cryer gets it out to Uzan, who goes off a screen, and then he spins back. The first option, I think, is Cryer trying to see if he can come off of a double staggered. They beat that. And then Sharp is the second option as he comes off of a staggered screen on the bottom. And to your point, and I think this is – I really haven't heard this talked about all that much. So I'm going to give you credit for it. Clayton's closeout is just
insane.
Incredible because he just races out there. Because he kind of gets lulled to sleep a little bit there with the action going on in the perimeter. And he sees it and just beats both of those staggered screens. Probably could have been executed a little bit better from a screening standpoint. But Clayton is, I mean, he makes the play, man. Like, that is a tremendous defensive play from Walter Clayton.
And I think maybe the last thing I'll say about it, too, is it also kind of shows how little we actually understand about defense. If Sharp shoots that and it gets swatted into the fourth row, we're talking about it's the greatest defensive play maybe in NCAA tournament history, given the stakes, everything. But because all he did was just impact the play and cause a turnover, it's like, man, you got to get a shot off.
I don't know. It's one of those things like, do you still just shoot it and hope he runs into you?
I was never afraid to fire. I probably fire and you just hope he's running so fast that he misses it.
Yeah. Yeah. He might just run by you or something like that.
Because whenever our coaches said give 110%, that was Clayton giving 110%. That was max effort going to get the ball. And you just pray to God, I let it fire and it misses his hand.
I want someone to do like a slow. Yeah. Because it's interesting.
I miss sports science.
Because Clayton is just kind of, he stops. He almost lets.
Yes.
It's almost poor. I mean, anyone who's ever done the shell drill where you're like, help. Oh, it's the worst.
That and then get in a stance and go down the floor. Ugh, gross. Oh, God. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's give our awards out for the tournament. We'll do that next. Also, during hour number two, we'll get into, of course, the news of the day, the Denver Nuggets have followed the Grizzlies' lead. They fired not only their coach, this time they one-upped him. They fired their GM, too. We'll talk about that during the list. Also get into a Masters preview with Wes Reynolds when we come back in hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday early access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can choose the TV you want with DirecTV.
So now they can pick out their favorite entertainment when they sign up and save money?
You mean if you like sports,
you can get a sports pack.
What about entertainment?
Entertainment pack.
It's like finding an old pizza with your favorite toppings.
Which for me would be pineapple and toenails. Pineapple?
Pay for the TV you want, not the TV you don't. Genre pack starting at $34.99 a month. Visit DirecTV.com for more information. New residential customers only. Local channels vary by market. Services renew monthly unless you cancel online. Credit card required. Restrictions apply.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like scrolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you get at the store, like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
All right, Tim, as you said, we don't cry because it's over. We smile because it happened. We have reached the end of the NCAA tournament. We'll have to figure out new things to fill our time with, perhaps, I don't know, our families, something along those lines. But I think let's wrap up the NCAA tournament. Let's hand out some awards. I'll let you go first. I'd sent you the topics. I think let's start with, what do you think was the biggest story of the tournament?
I think it was...
It can be... that's the other thing. We don't even have to do the, you're trying to be a critic, and this can be personal. What you're, you know, what you personally believe. It doesn't even have to be like, oh, you're making the persuasive case in an academic setting.
Well, I think, you know, chalk being kind of chalk holding, right?
Yeah.
The fact that all four ones made it to the Final Four for the first time since 08 and only second time ever. No 12 seeds made the Sweet 16. Our Cinderella, as I put up air quotes,
yep,
was a very expensive roster.
Maybe a $10 million roster.
Right. So I think that was a little bit of the story. But my secondary story would be, you know, everyone wants to bellyache over NIL and the transfer portal. And I'm not saying it's perfect because if you've ever watched any of my shows or heard me on this show here, I'm not a very black and white person. I'm a pretty gray, like, you know, there's probably something on the little side. Does NIL have its issues? Does the transfer portal have its issues? Sure. But the fact that Walter Clayton Jr. is your MOP, a once upon a time chubby kid at Iona who Rick Pitino offered $1,100 to come to St. John's, and he goes to Florida as an absolute superstar, that's kind of neat. And the fact that, you know, the stars shined in the biggest moments. I know Cooper Flagg missed that shot at the end of the game, but still he had, what, 25-8 in that Final Four game?
I think 27.
Yeah, I mean, he hit the big three that I thought was the dagger from the corner there to make it a 9-point lead for Duke with, you know, three and change to go. So I think to me, the story might be that, you know, and I'll get to this a little bit later because it something annoyed me about it, but I think it is that it was chalky, but I think the fact that the stars shined is another storyline for me. Because the biggest names in college basketball, 1 and 2 for the Wooden Award in Broome and Flagg, and then Clayton, who's a first-team All-American, were all at the Final Four and all were, you know, playing pretty darn well.
No, I think those are all valid. I mean, I'm keeping it personal. I'm saying this from every emotion possible. Enjoyment, confusion. Duke's collapse on Saturday night. Tim, I immediately went back and I watched like the last 12 minutes right after. I still couldn't figure it out. CBS Sports Network on Sunday, when there really wasn't a whole lot going on because the women's game was over with when it started. The golf, if you watched golf on Sunday, it was gross. I don't care if you watched PGA Tour, if you watched LIV, it was all gross. CBS Sports Network put the game back on and I still, like, I just can't fathom it. And then obviously it's so much sweeter when you get the Coach USA tracker from the moment that they were just hammering him with the cameras, and then you realize, like, I believe Houston went on 11-2 run, not that I was counting, ever since they showed him with, like, 3 minutes left. It was just everything. It was a reminder of, like, I miss him. Like, I openly admit it. Like, yes, I live to hate him, but I miss him. Like, he makes it more interesting, and, like, it was everything from Houston having to hit all of those shots to what was Proctor doing holding on to the basketball, not passing it to Flagg? Because to your point, I think if he passes it to Flag, I don't think we're talking about Cooper missing the 7-foot fadeaway. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think he would have missed. And I think, you know, another storyline, I think Duke's a good storyline, blowing that lead. I think comebacks are a big storyline. I mean, the champion, I pointed this out. I mean, I know everything kind of comes back to a gambling theme for me. They didn't cover the first half in their last 5 games. They were tied at halftime against UConn. They were up 2 against Maryland in a game that, you know, that of the final 5 games that they played, the one that would really wasn't in doubt was the Maryland game, but they were only up 2 at the half. They were up 3 against Texas Tech, and that went to a deficit. They were able to overcome that in somehow, some way, against a pretty darn good defensive team in Texas Tech. So I think comebacks, too, when you think about how Houston got to the championship game and how Florida won the championship game, trailing by 10, 9, and 12. And Evan Abrams pointed this out on Twitter. Florida is the first champ in the last 20 years to finish the NCAA tournament 3-0 or better when trailing by 8 or more points at any point.
Yeah, and I think maybe my secondary story, like to give Florida credit, I think we got to the tournament and I felt like the best team won. You know, I know UConn kind of spoils it for us for the last 2 years because
I think Duke's the best team.
Man, there's something about Florida like being like,
and I think I'm splitting hairs. I think Duke's the best team, but
maybe the most deserving team won.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, look, I mean, think about the, you know, everything they dealt with, you know, for them to come off this. So
player of the tournament, like I don't know how it can't be.
Yeah, it's, I mean, he's, you know, it's funny. I went back and I looked it up because we, I don't know if you're in this mindset, but I think a lot of us sports fans think of Kemba Walker as like this mythical run that he had. And it was awesome. Kemba Walker averaged 18 points per game in the last 3 games. Like, he was really good, but his big games came in the second round of the Sweet 16. Walter Clayton was on another level in the Elite Eight in the Final Four. Like, his shot still, and I think you pointed this out, the shot he made against Texas Tech where he just kind of meanders back to the 3-point line is things legends are made of.
No, I mean, that gets right into moment of the tournament. For me, it's the Walter Clayton's realizing 3 is more than 2. Like, I still think that's one of the coolest plays I've ever seen because it was so nonchalant going into the lane. Could have had an easy, you know, maybe not easy, but he could have easily had a 5-6 footer and goes, nah, I'm going to go back out here. They're not out there. Fires the 3, cans it. And, like, that's just, that's one of those plays that will forever just, like, be in my brain. So cold-blooded. The calmness under pressure, everything. It was just, man, that's what, like, you want your stud to do, and he did it. He saw the kill shot, and he took it.
I think that is probably the right answer. You know, our one buzzer beater was good. The Derek Queen shot off the glass against Colorado State. I think that game, that ending, probably will be forgotten pretty quickly because, you know, the whole Willard thing after that. But the way both those coaches left, Colorado State's coach Nico Medved went to Minnesota, but the way they hit that, the execution from Colorado State to get a 3 over an outstretched hand, just a beautiful teardrop to fall in, and then for Maryland to get it off the glass for our only buzzer beater was impressive. I still love the inbounds pass that Houston drew.
That's
up.
A good one. That's a very good one.
The back to the inbounder Uzan to finish at the buzzer. And then how about, and I'm glad it made one shining moment, how about the Alabama State St. Francis finish where they throw the Hail Mary, it gets deflected up, and they get the bucket.
Unbelievable
at the
play.
That was the first game of the tournament.
Well, it's like, and if you and I, we watched every second of that game because we're sick. That game was defined by horrible basketball. That last play was incredible. That's like what made it even like better theater. It was the play that leads up to that is the St. Francis kid couldn't dribble and the ball just went out of bounds. And then they execute a high level of difficulty play in the Hail Mary, Guy uses his body, turns around. I mean, that was an unbelievable play.
I want more teams to do that because they knew they couldn't lose. I don't know if you could do that play if you're down one because they were tied, right? It was six,
yes.
Was it 68 all? So I loved it because you were like, screw it. What's the worst that's going to happen? We'll go to overtime. And the best that's going to happen is people are going to hit into each other and it's going to bounce up like a Hail Mary, like the Bears and Commanders game. And our guys is going to get a layup. Like that started the tournament. And I know it led to a tournament that didn't have any buzzer beaters outside of the Derrick Queen play, but that play was pretty awesome.
No, I totally agree. That's definitely worth noting. For you, what was the biggest surprise of the tournament?
I think it was St. John's. And I guess I shouldn't say it's a big surprise because I thought they would bow out. I didn't think they would make it to the Final Four.
There was a lot of metrics that suggested that they would.
That this would happen.
Yeah.
Yes. And they were a bad shooting team. And that I think what was surprising was how they kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
And how you've got a team that is coached by one of the all-time greats, and I still think one of the best coaches in the game, and what he did to kind of revitalize this program. And then I think back to, because I tried to slay the dragon that is St. John's a couple of times, right? On the road at Marquette at the end of the regular season. I think I went against them once or twice in the Big East tournament, and they kept kind of overcoming it and being like, all right, well, maybe this is just kind of a, I don't want to say team of destiny, but a team that's just tough enough. They're not going to implode. And then they kind of imploded against Arkansas, right? They shot terribly. RJ Lewis is all over the place. He gets benched the final 4 or 5 minutes, whatever it was. So I think how St. John's bowed out to me was probably the most surprising.
Maybe this is too personal because, like, I know people in my fair city feel a certain way, and I'm the biggest believer of, like, you watch sports the way you want to watch it. If you feel a certain way, you do. Did it not feel like Cal kind of had a little bit of a face turn this tournament? Like, I don't know. Like, I just found myself, and maybe it's because I had the Arkansas stock that I couldn't dump in February, and so, like, I'm stuck with it. But, you know, you got Cal, Megan, his daughters, like, going nuts, and they're watching, and it's just, I don't know, I kind of felt like you realize, like, Cal's at his best not when he's the coach of Kentucky. Like, he's at his best when Arkansas is still, like, I feel like an underrated basketball program. Like, their fans are not fair weather fans. Like, they care about Arkansas basketball.
Oh, yeah.
And as we've pointed out, like, the acting like that roster was an underdog roster, but he was still able to reasonably play the underdog role. Nobody believes in you. I don't know, like, I just feel like that's kind of the version of Cal that I at least find the most interesting.
I found him, yeah, I think as the year went on, I found him very interesting. Oh, by the way, going back to, we overlooked this, one of the moments, how about Mark Sears making about 10 billion threes against BYU?
Yeah. I think it was Alabama. If you would have taken away, if Alabama just got threes and free throws, they would have won the game by like 20.
I mean, that game, if Alabama played that way last night, they win the champion. Like, they would have beaten anybody. They would have beaten Duke. Like, they would have beaten anybody. But they, I don't want to say they waste, you know, the movie Big Daddy.
Oh, yeah.
They wasted the good surprise on you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they wasted it on BYU. But they kind of wasted it on BYU. Well, also BYU stinks defensively.
Well,
so
I think the other aspect of it is, like, we should. I can't. Were you on Bama that game?
I didn't bet that game.
Okay, I was on BYU.
I was on Duke heavy in the Elite Eight.
I was just on BYU money line. I was like, if this just turns into a 3-point shooting contest, I was like, I'll take the odds. I probably overlooked the fact that BYU was like 280th in the country defending the three. And then you realize, like, oh, they were trying to go underneath every single screen. It's like, well, this is over. And, like, you realize it pretty quickly. And then when they were airballing threes, like, it was that was, no, you're 100% right on that. All right, biggest disappointment of the tournament. I'm not skipping over the one that I was saving it for the end because I feel like you got something good.
I don't know. I don't want to build it up too much. biggest disappointment. I'll let you go first because I kind of had St. John's as my biggest disappointment.
I thought my biggest disappointment was the lack of memorable games. And
yeah,
you and I both agree, even if it's not a good tournament, it's still good. It's still a great watch. Like, it's, you're judging it based on, I always view this as, anytime I go see a Tarantino movie, because he has such a style, like, you know when you're watching a Tarantino movie. So I don't compare it to 98% of the other trash that I watch. Like, I'm not comparing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood to Eurotrip. Like, I'm comparing it to other Tarantino movies. I just kind of, I felt like this is exactly like the 07 tournament for me, which is, I know Florida won. Florida deserved to win. And the Final Four, I think, made up for a lot of the ho-humness of the tournament. But I do feel like if I have to think back on this in 10 years, I'm going to struggle to remember a lot of games.
Yeah, I think that's, I think my biggest disappointment would be that, which is every year I look forward to the Thursday and Friday probably more than any day on the sports calendar, because it's just got this all-day vibe of 14 hours. You just sit there, you watch college basketball, you're going to get great results, you can set up the multi-screens, and it's not even the lack of upsets. It was kind of, to your point, the lack of memorable games. You know, we had the St. Mary's comeback against Vanderbilt, but that's not one we're going to remember. We didn't have like the
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight. You're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.